Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Archana, and I'm a research analyst at ISAS. With growing digitalization in India, there has been a lot of discussion about the impact of artificial intelligence on the Indian economy. In today's episode, we discuss a recent report that studies India's AI ecosystem and its impact on the Indian economy. The report's lead author is our guest for today, Dr. Rajat Kathuria, who is the Director and Chief Executive at Indian Council for Research on International Economic Relations, or ICRIER, New Delhi. The report was jointly published by NASSCOM, Google, and ICRIER. So is India's artificial intelligence moment truly here? We find out in today's episode. Dr. Kathuria, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Archana, and thank you for having me and Mansi on the show. Mansi is one of the co-authors of the report as well, and it's always a pleasure to speak with ISAS at the National University of Singapore.
Thank you. So, firstly, could you tell us briefly about the recent report of yours titled Implication of AI on the Indian Economy, its goal slash purpose, and some of the findings in the report?
Well, as the title of the report suggests, we were trying to explore the sort of meta macro impacts of AI on the Indian economy, recognizing, as it were, that it is a general purpose technology. And this is something that we've been doing in ICRIER for a while, at least for the last decade, looking at the impacts of digital technologies on GDP or GDP growth. And we thought that this was the right moment, as you said in your initial remarks. This is the right moment to sort of attempt that exercise, because we think that India's AI moment is here. The moment to make the changes in the Indian economy, to set the ball rolling, to sort of leverage the bigger impacts that will come later. So we thought this was the right moment to bring out this report. And what we did was we studied through data the impact of AI on TFP, which is total factor productivity, and the impact of total factor productivity on GDP growth. And what we found is that AI impacts total factor productivity, and total factor productivity impacts GDP growth, and therefore the impacts of AI on GDP at the macro level can be traced through the conduit of what economists call total factor productivity. And we found that the impacts are fairly high, they're fairly profound. In fact, they're about every unit increase in AI can lead to about 2.5%. You know, given all the measurement errors, given all the caveats, we think that this is a profound impact. A unit increase in AI will lead to about 2.5% growth in GDP in India. That's the headline impact of this report. And I think it should be taken with all the caveats that we've mentioned, but it's also taken seriously, because I think down the line, we'll begin to see these impacts actually being realized and actually felt. Right now, with AI being intangible, a lot of people feel that these impacts are sort of overestimated. And we recognize that. And the reason we recognize that is that any technology before us, before this, in the form of general purpose technology, whether it was, I think, internet, whether it was the digital impacts, whether it was the roads or electricity, any technology initially that diffuses in economies first diffuses slowly and then begins to scale up. But the excitement around those technologies is fairly high. And there's a very famous economist by the name of Dornbusch, who studied sort of overshooting impacts in financial markets and finds that, you know, when there is a shock in the economy, the initial immediate response to that shock is one of sort of overestimation, or what he calls overshooting. There might be some overshooting in this case as well, because, you know, as AI, as we've seen AI across economies, there have been periods of dormancy and there's periods of a lot of excitement. I think this is a period of excitement of AI, I think, across the world and in India as well, because the Niti Aayog also has a national strategy for AI. I think this could be a period that is characterized as one of excitement in India. And the reason is straightforward, because computing power has grown, algorithms have become you know, much more powerful. There's so much of data that is now being generated. So there might be some sort of overestimation, or there might be some overshooting in the results. But I think the system is such that AI is going to, you know, not just be transitory, but it's going to be permanent, and you're going to see impacts of AI unfold in the Indian economy over time, as it is you're going to see the impacts unfold in the rest of the economies as well.
Very interesting. As you've mentioned, the report discusses the relationship between AI and India's TFP. But as we know, TFP has traditionally also included factors like labor inputs and human capital. Now, many people say that artificial intelligence risks wiping out many jobs in the manufacturing industry. What is your take on this?
I think that's true for any technology. I mean, it could be true for artificial intelligence as well. There have been sort of vulnerabilities that have been sort of people have talked about, especially in terms of employment and the replacement potential of AI on jobs. But I think this requires a little more nuance. I mean, the threat could be there, but the threat would be heterogeneous across countries. For developed countries, the threat of AI replacing jobs could be different, and the threat of AI replacing jobs in emerging markets in India could be different. And it has to be nuanced. And I think the sort of scholarly literature on the impacts of AI on labor markets has come to the conclusion that it's not whole jobs that are likely to be threatened. It is sort of tasks that are going to be vulnerable, and those tasks might be replaced by AI. Some specific tasks might be replaced by AI, but the threat to jobs, I think, is overplayed. Again, if I were to use the metaphor that I used earlier, I think the threat to jobs is overplayed, not only sort of in India, but also across the world. There have been very alarmist numbers that have been thrown about for the rest of the world, including India. I remember in 2016, it was said that almost 50% of Indian jobs were at risk due to AI in the manufacturing sector. And that hasn't happened in the 4 years that have passed since 2016. And I don't think that will happen in the future. Every technology creates disruptions, and I think AI will also create disruptions, but we need to be able to leverage the power of AI. And that power of AI has been demonstrated in the report, which is it's going to have global macroeconomic impacts in India, and those are going to be positive. So we have to think about how we can leverage these impacts for GDP growth while recognizing that there could be some displacement of tasks, but we'll have, since GDP will grow, we'll be able to create more jobs, we'll be able to create more sort of employment opportunities, but we need to be ready for those by creating changes in the labor market, structural changes in the labor market. One of the structural changes would be to have, you know, address the skill gap so that people are trained to be able to, you know, do the jobs that are going to be made available in the future as a result of economic growth, not only due to AI, but due to the other factors, other structural changes that are going to happen in the Indian economy. I'm not for a moment dismissing the fact that it is a worry that there are going to be some vulnerabilities, but that happens with every technology. But we should not throw the baby out with the bathwater. We should be able to leverage the benefits of AI by creating changes in the labor market, by creating changes in the sort of associated markets, so that we can leverage the power that AI has on the economy.
That is quite reassuring in some ways. One of the aspects discussed in the report is the benefits of digital adoption for businesses. Here in Singapore, where we sit at ISAS, the government is increasingly doing more through schemes and initiatives to encourage small and medium enterprises to kind of gradually adopt digitalization. Now, would it be considered a far-fetched idea to expect the same from government of India to do so across the country, which otherwise would put AI adoption as merely a private sector kind of a thing?
I think it would be a shame if we just limited AI adoption to the private sector. The private sector will do it, and the private sector is already doing it. And our report also shows the initiatives that the private sector has taken for AI adoption. But I think the challenge will be, as you're rightly saying, is how do you get small and medium enterprises to adopt this technology and benefit from this technology without, you know, compromising on the creation of employment opportunities that India so desperately needs. And the reason I say that is because small and medium enterprises are the backbone of any economy, including India, in terms of GDP, in terms of employment opportunities, in terms of exports. You know, companies that are small and medium sometimes grow to become of very large size. And all the big tech giants that we talk about today started, you know, as small enterprises, as micro enterprises. One of the problems in India has always been that small and medium enterprises haven't been able to graduate into becoming big, into acquiring scale of the kind that companies in China have been able to acquire. I think this is an opportunity where we can use technology, where we can use artificial intelligence to enable firms to become big, to grow out of those shackles that force them to remain small. I think this is an opportunity to do that. And once we acquire scale through technology, then I think the economy would be able to benefit. But as I said, we cannot leave this only to the private sector, because diffusion of technology, diffusion of AI, if you believe the results of the report, will happen, but it might happen with a lag, because private sector would look at, you know, interests, profit motives, before it makes investments. So I think government needs to come in, de-risk the process of digitization, de-risk the process of adoption of AI for small and medium enterprises, which, as I said, are the backbone of any economy in terms of GDP and employment. And I think market failure is a term that economists often use for technological diffusion. And we could sort of use that term or characterize the diffusion of AI as a market failure, because it will come, but it will come with a lag. So the government's then role becomes one to try and de-risk the adoption of AI for small and medium enterprises. And the reason I say this is because this is going to be terribly important given India's own vulnerabilities, in not only in terms of GDP, but also in terms of employment growth at the level of demographics that we have in India today.
Very interesting. If we move to AI in the international arena, recently India joined the Global Partnership on Artificial Intelligence, which other countries such as America, the United Kingdom, Japan, and Singapore, and even EU for that matter, have been a part of. Could you tell us, in relation to India's current AI developments, what are some of the challenges and prospects that India may possibly encounter by pursuing this partnership?
Before I get into the meat of that question, let me just say a couple of things before I answer the question, which is that, you know, at the current stage of India's development cycle, we will become a middle-income country and even a rich country, maybe in a few decades. But I think we are already a data-rich country, which means that we are data-rich before we become economically rich. And data richness can actually be a conduit or can be a stepping stone to help India become a rich country. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the old trade theories and even, you know, the idea of comparative advantage, which suggests that, you know, countries that have abundance in a particular resource can become competitive in that resource. So, for example, if you're a labor abundant country, like China was at once upon a time, and it probably still is, it has a competitive edge in exporting labor-intensive products to the rest of the world. And that was a route through which China became a middle-income country and was able to exploit its advantage to its own benefit. I think India, by being a data-rich country, and we have enormous amounts of data that India is producing today, and we can become competitive in data-intensive products, however intangible it might sound today, given our strengths in IT, given our strengths in software, and if you match it with those sort of advantages that we have in data, provided we use the data right, and provided that we create the safeguards of how we are going to use personal data and how we are going to use non-personal data, and we have all those safeguards in place, I think India has a unique opportunity to be able to become, you know, very, very competitive in these digital products and digital services and AI. So I think there'll be a lot of benefit if we were to get into arrangements and collaborations with these other countries. And I'm so happy that we've joined the AI initiatives along with these other countries that you've mentioned. But I think we'll have to get our regulations in place. We'll have to get our institutions in place so that we can actually leverage and exploit this opportunity that is staring at us in the face. India has, you know, at this time, you know, EU, US have considered that, you know, do not consider India to be a safe harbor for data. And I think we have to address some of those issues, not to give up on our rights to the data that we have, but to use it in a collaborative and a cooperative manner that we can then exploit the advantages that we have. And I think this is a unique, as I said, this is a unique opportunity for India. So try and balance the trade-off. Which one, the trade-off is exploit the benefit while at the same time safeguarding your own national interest. And I think that will be an art to be able to do that, but we must do that. Let me also try and sort of get in Mansi, who's, you know, worked extensively on this report, to add something that she might wish to.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on this last point about the need for global governance around data and the artificial intelligence economy, and the fact that digital platforms are now becoming more global. You have the G7 and the G20 individually and collectively working on principles for AI. So you have AI principles that were recognized under the G20, and the G7 led by France and Canada also came up with this with these global alliances and partnerships. Because with AI, the challenge is not just about understanding the technology and being able to, so largely for developing countries, they've been hungry for technology. So understanding technology has been one of the major concerns. But with AI, it's more than that. It's not just about adoption and diffusion. It's also about the ethics around its diffusion, the responsible diffusion of AI, as they call it, and the need for the skill gap that was referred to earlier by Dr. Kathuria. So that is something that countries are now trying to work together collectively to make the diffusion process more inclusive, focus on human rights, to ensure that this is welfare enhancing, that the adoption of AI is essentially welfare enhancing for the global collective. And within the G20, I'd like to highlight that Japan in 2019 had actually brought in the focus of Society 5.0, where there was a deliberate focus on how technology could help human lives. So I think the nature of global collaboration on AI has gone beyond how countries can share technology and learn from each other and innovate together. It's become more about its responsible adoption.
Thank you both for those wonderful insights. And finally, Mansi, you can also step in for this question if you wish to. Since the report analysis was performed before COVID-19, do you both foresee any substantial differences in the government of India's and other firms' pursuit of AI developments?
Well, I think so. What COVID has done is that it's led to a spike in the digitization in the economy. And therefore, I think many sectors that were earlier either not using digitization will begin to use digitization. And the government also wishes to promote artificial intelligence, not only as a short-term strategy to address the pandemic situation, but also as a long-term strategy to sort of alleviate some of the issues that we are dealing with in the Indian economy. Now, the thing about COVID and the spike in digitization is that We will need to revisit the estimates that I spoke about at the beginning of the report. Remember, at the beginning of the report, I had mentioned, or the beginning of the interview, that I had mentioned that there is likely to be some sort of an overestimation, possibly, as a result of the sort of excitement around AI. And it has been documented in the economics literature, especially in financial markets. You often get a phenomenon which is called overshooting. But in case during the pandemic situation where there's been such an increase in the scale and usage of digitization and perhaps AI, we could also end up in a situation later where we could underestimate, we may have underestimated the impacts of AI. So it could go either way, but we don't know which is right. But this is sort of an initial report that is trying to understand the impacts that AI could have on the economy. It could perhaps be too much. It could perhaps be an underestimate. But what we do know is that, like, people, scholars and people who've been working in this area have said that this could have profound impacts on the economy since this is a GPT. So the essential feature of this report is to understand the macro implications of AI. I also wanted to use this opportunity, Archana, to say what the report is not about. The report is not about trying to address any of the competition or antitrust issues that might arise that people are talking about in terms of platform economies, in terms of AI. Naturally, AI is something that initially will be a feature of big companies. Hopefully, it will trickle down to smaller companies using AI as well, as we've talked about in this interview. But this report doesn't get into monopolization. It doesn't get into antitrust issues. That is a separate issue. All that we've tried to address in this report is the fact that AI could have profound impacts on the economy as a general purpose technology, just as electricity, the steam engine, and even fire have all had on economies across the world.
Mansi, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, just I'm going to use an example that illustrates what Dr. Kathuria was saying. In a chat that we had, with online e-commerce companies, they were telling us how a number of small and medium enterprises, including mom and pop shops, have now registered on these platforms. And what e-commerce companies essentially do is to digitize, help them digitize systems. So this formalization and digital adoption has truly happened. And we see a classic example in the case of e-commerce. And perhaps it's happening across all sectors. Telemedicine is the other thing that has really taken over, and responsibly through new guidelines that were introduced by the government. This is really happening, and I think it'll be a good time for us to revisit the estimates and see some of these micro impacts on industry.
Thank you both, Dr. Kathuria and Mansi, for joining us today and for agreeing to speak with us, and also for sharing those wonderful insights. We hope to hear more from you in the future. I think it is safe to say, indeed, India's AI moment is truly here. On that note, we conclude, and thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much, Archana.
Thank you.
Thanks, Archana.
We hope you enjoyed the insights. If you wish to know more about our work at ISAS, please visit www.isas.nus.edu.sg. Thank you.